has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Punch it.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
Well, greetings, my little tauntauns, and welcome to this episode of Unmistakably Star Wars. We are in the middle of exploring Joseph Campbell's work, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And I'll be honest with you, dear listener, this has got so much meat on the bone, I don't know how many episodes are going to be part of this series, but I hope you are finding that's a very good thing, because we are in the bowels of what made up Star Wars. We are creeping around and picking up all the stones and looking in the shadows and the corners to really discover how this work and Joseph Campbell's interpretation of mythology was a major influencer of George Lucas and, of course, Star Wars. So before we get too far down the road, let me go ahead and welcome the rest of the USW team for this episode from the land of beaver tails and cream ales, the one and only Barb the Canadian.
That's me. Hey, everybody.
And from the 618, the always fabulous Miss Regina Sanders.
Hello, everyone.
So here we are, ladies. We are in the midst of this study with Joseph Campbell. And again, I know I've said it probably on each episode thus far within the series. I'm loving where we're going with this. I'm learning new things, and I'm fascinated by the fact that we have some of our official Star Wars author friends who haven't read the book themselves. So I absolutely love this. So hopefully, dear listener, you are finding this as insightful as well. So tonight we are getting into chapter two. That's right. We've had four episodes so far. It's only covered chapter one. And if I can have a confession with you, listeners, we really barely even just scratched the surface on those things. But hopefully that you're at least getting maybe inspired to read the book yourself and to draw on some of the imagery and things that Joseph Campbell is talking about to have an own personalized better understanding of Star Wars. So again, let me kind of walk you through the hero's journey as defined by Joseph Campbell. It all begins with The Departure, which was chapter one in that is encompassed, and it kind of breaks out into these different parts of within The Departure, including the call to adventure, refusal of the call, supernatural aid, the crossing of the first threshold, and then this thing that is really close to that is often referred to as the belly of the whale. So we got that far. Last week, Carl and I talked about the crossing of the first threshold, the belly of the whale a little bit, and here we are getting into chapter two, and chapter two is called Initiation. And let me go ahead and just preview the various parts of chapter two for you. The road of trials, the meeting with the goddess, woman as the temptress, atonement with the father, apotheosis, which is such a fun word. In fact, for those of you who may be listening to this and may be pregnant right now, if you haven't come up with a name for your child, I guarantee you apotheosis will not have a rival in kindergarten of that same name. So consider that, apotheosis. And then the last part of chapter two, the initiation, is the ultimate boon. So as we get ready for our closer look tonight, we're jumping into chapter two. We're probably just going to touch on the first part of this initiation, which is the road of trials. So with that, sit back, dear listeners, grab your copy of Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces, grab your marking pen or highlighter, and let's jump in to our closer look.
This is Bonnie Peace.
This is Jeffrey Brown.
Hi, this is Eric Walker.
This is Jason Fry.
Hi, this is Delilah S. Dawson.
And you are listening to Unmistakably.
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 Unmistakably Star Wars, the podcast.
This bickering is pointless. Why are you asking this of me?
I am here because you are here.
We will use all our resources to unravel this mystery.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
What did you say?
Same thing I always do, talk my way out of it.
Brute
tired of asking this, so it'll be the last time.
How simple you make it. Life in dark as if there is one without the other.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
All right, here we are. We're going to get into it now. Chapter 2, Initiation. Now, Barb, Regina, here's the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of initiation. It was me working at a restaurant. And actually, Gina, in the 618, me working at a restaurant called Ruby Tuesday in the early 1990s. Gina, do they still have Ruby Tuesday around there?
They do still have Ruby Tuesday there.
Yes, I love that. So many good memories from that place, and only a very few of those memories I could actually share on a family-friendly program. So that being said, this particular Ruby Tuesday, which I guess if you're not familiar with the chain Ruby Tuesday, think somewhere between a chain that's kind of like Applebee's and Fridays and a couple of those other things kind of put together with its own little spin on it. So we were the anchor store for the mall, and we had two things that we would always do to brand new servers whenever they were on their first shift. Both were delightful. One, we would come up to them in a very harried and stressed tone of voice, and we'd say, "Listen, I need you to go downstairs into the wine cellar and find the bottle of the 1991 Clos de Bois." And inevitably, they were trying to please, and they left panicked. And you know, I'll be honest with you, dear listener, we didn't have a wine cellar, but just the fact that they went all over in a panic looking for a wine cellar was fantastic. And equally as fantastic was the fact, because we were this anchor store in the mall, we had the mall's flagpoles right outside of the store. So inevitably, at the end of this server's first shift, we would always say, "Hey, before you go, the last thing you need to do is you need to go ahead, go outside and lower the flag down," which of course alerted mall police. And they came over. It was a pre-Paul Blart era, but nonetheless, here comes the mall police, and wanting to find out why this person is taking down the flag. So well, let me just throw that out there as some type of initiation that we used to put folks through. Barb, any particular initiations that you've been through, either with previous jobs or schooling or anything like that?
Honestly, not so much. I remember witnessing a lot of the initiations that took place in high school, and it tended to be towards the guys. Mm. So, you know, we would see the grade 9 kids. That's, I know I say it different in Canada, but they really got the worst of it, and I felt so bad for them. But no, as a girl, I was pretty safe. I also had my older brother at school, so most people left me alone. I never really had an official initiation anywhere. So yeah, I have no experience in that way to speak of.
That's almost disappointing. Regina, how about you?
I have been a part of two secret societies in college, which I will not get into because they're secret societies.
Wow.
That got initiations. And then the other one was I've been in a co-ed fraternity. And in order to be a part of that leadership team, we had to go through initiation of memorizing certain facts about the fraternity, memorizing step routines. We did step and a lot of things like that. So I've been initiated into three things, and only one of them I can talk about. Yeah.
Wow. This is like, we need to call Nicolas Cage, because there's some serious Book of Secrets going on here with Regina tonight. We're going to have to dig into this off air, maybe make it a Patreon-only episode. I love it. I think that initiation, you know, it's one thing that other cultures still actually have as part of, in many cases, becoming an adult. In some cases, depending on where geographically it's happening, some indigenous tribes also just have still this rite of passage / initiation for young men to become men. And I think a couple of episodes ago, I shared the example of there are indigenous tribes within South America that in order for the young boys to become men, they have to place their hands in these woven baskets that they're like gloves, really. And in there are stinging ants, and they have to keep their hands in there for 20 minutes, take them out, do some dancing, put them back in there for 20 minutes again. They have to repeat that, I think, six times, which If you haven't seen the videos on YouTube, just search for something like Rite of Passage, Stinging Ants, and you'll find a plethora of videos. And not only watch the one that's from National Geographic, but watch the one when a couple of college age frat boys go down there and think that they can handle it. And it's gold. It's absolutely gold. With that, I want to talk a little bit about initiation from Joseph Campbell's standpoint. And of course, part one of chapter two is the road of trials. And this is kind of what sums up Campbell's writing here. The road of trials, this is the stage of the hero's journey, as Campbell would write, in which he, the hero, or I guess she, encounters a series of challenges. These challenges could be either physical challenges, they could be psychological, emotional challenges, and the hero must overcome them in order for his or her journey to continue. So it's this roadblock, it's this toll booth, if you will, that unless you're going to go through it, you're not going to go around it, over it, or under it. So it's this pivotal point where, in many ways, a first test. I want to come to you first, Gina. When you think in terms of how this plays with Star Wars, and you know, we go back to we've heard the phrase the Jedi trials or the trials so many times before we even had a clear vision of what that was. But so, Gina, from your understanding, when you hear Campbell's take on this, that the hero is going to encounter a series of physical and or emotional challenges that must be overcome, who are some of the Star Wars names that come to mind, or what are some of the Star Wars situations that come to mind when you have this mental image of overcoming this physical or psychological trial?
So the first character that comes to mind is, I think of Anakin. And the first thing that popped in my mind, and I think it might be because it was Attack of the Clones birthday a little while ago, but I think of this idea of his mom being kidnapped and needing to go get her, and then struggling with the fact that she's been gone, I think for like a month or something, she's been gone for so long and killing the Tusken Raiders. And so that idea of this psychological, emotional, the fact that he has an attachment, which he's not really supposed to have, and then dealing with her death and what leads to that, and knowing that he's supposed to be better and how he goes on his journey. But I also think of Rey and this idea of another emotional or psychological attachment to who her parents are and why that's keeping her on Jakku, and what she's willing to believe when it gets to The Last Jedi, until we get The Rise of Skywalker, when everything's like fully confirmed and in her face. And so having to deal with these ideas of who are your parents and what do your parents mean to you before you can continue on your journey.
I love that take, mostly. Well, let me give you two reasons. One, because it's wholly accurate. And two, because I don't think that would have been the go-to for most people. I think, you know, our natural default setting, I think so often, is Luke Skywalker. So I love the fact that you came at that from a very different angle with a different character. One of the important parts about this trial is the fact that this psychological or physical challenge has to be overcome not just by the hero, but the hero alone. And I think that that's important because, you know, one of the things that we see in Star Wars is we find so many parts where friends are coming in, or the Alliance is coming in, or whomever's coming in to aid a hero or another character through a situation. But this is something that the hero or heroine has to accomplish alone. Barb, from your perspective, when you hear initiation, road of trials, overcoming physical or psychological challenges, what are some of the things or some of the people that come first to mind for you?
From Star Wars.
Clearly.
Clearly. Obviously, you know, I have a bias towards that question because Luke is the one that not only stands out as the hero that we began with in 1977, but because that's what I wrote my paper on, was Luke's hero's journey, how it's represented in all of the films. And it really is, you know, in reading the second chapter again of The Hero with a Thousand Faces and kind of re-going over some of my notes that I wrote in my thesis, there's so much there from Luke that really just represents everything that Joseph Campbell is talking about. And one of the quotes, I just think it speaks so clearly as to what exactly Luke was going through, specifically in Empire Strikes Back. And this is right out of Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces. He says, the specific psychological difficulties of the dreamer frequently are revealed with touching simplicity and force. I had to climb a mountain. There were all kinds of obstacles in the way. I had to now jump over a ditch, now to get over a hedge, and finally to stand still because I had lost my breath. And that just, to me, is a picture of exactly what is happening with Luke on Dagobah. There's no better picture to me of the initiation and the trials that he's going through than what you see him going through with Yoda on his back on Dagobah. You know, he's jumping over ditches, he's climbing ropes, he's running fast, and then he stops, he catches his breath, and that's where Yoda has him thinking and being one with the Force and lifting rocks and learning how to balance the physical with the non-physical. There's just so much there. And I really want to apply it to, you know, I was thinking about Rey and everything that she went through, as well as Anakin in the prequels. And there's so much there. There really is. But Luke is just the obvious choice.
Well, I want to stick with that, Barb, for a moment, because you did, for those of you that are listening to this and are unaware that, Barb, you actually wrote your thesis on Luke Skywalker and the hero's journey. And so let me ask you this, because it's been a while since you wrote that. Is going through Campbell's work now, years later, is it bringing fresh insight to what you had originally written in your thesis?
Yes and no. It's very interesting reading Joseph Campbell again now, because I'm so far removed from the academia side that I'm like, oh, wow. You know, there's so much in one sentence of Joseph Campbell, let alone an entire chapter. Yeah. And when I was engulfed in that and, you know, every day was focused on writing a thesis and researching all these books, it seemed to come easier than it does now. Now I have to reread several parts and be like, okay, what is he talking about? And there's so much myth and symbol in the things that he's talking about that you really have to take what he's saying and figure out how to apply it. And some of it doesn't apply. That's the thing. Not everything that Joseph Campbell writes about is in Luke's journey or in any Star Wars journey, but there's a lot that is. And one of the notes that I made today was just becoming aware in the first initiation stage of becoming aware of a higher power. And in A New Hope, as we all know, now this is also because it's the very first Star Wars movie and nobody knows what the Force is in 1977 when you're going to the movie, so they need to explain it. But I find it very interesting that Luke has no knowledge of the Force, not even that he has a knowledge of his own power, but to not know anything about this Force that is supposed to be so prevalent in the Star Wars galaxy. But he's on this remote planet where he's been in his own world, where his quote unquote parents have kept him doing what he's doing, that this higher power is just almost lost on him. But he's curious and he wants to know. And that is a big key that Joseph Campbell talks about in chapter two, is the initiation phase, is learning about this higher power. And that, I think, is representative of how he begins it in A New Hope. But the trials really continue in The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. And just like Campbell leaves us a lot to unpack, I mean, your response was beautiful and leaves a lot to unpack, which is great. But I think that, you know, it's true that perhaps our default setting for the hero's journey is Luke Skywalker, because for a very long while, the Star Wars galaxy was very small. And he was at the center of that. And as we've added comics and novels and eight new movies and everything else that's gone, well, I guess more than that, if we include the animated Clone War film, but also the animated series, and our galaxy has expanded dramatically, which leads into something else that you brought up, Barb, and that is, we don't necessarily see, whether it's Luke or anyone else within the Star Wars galaxy, go through each and every step as Campbell defines it.
Exactly.
That there will be parts of that, and there will be parts of the hero's journey where we might only get a snippet or an example from a character but we still kind of tweezing it out of the hero's journey and can say like, oh, well, this is where I see that play out, even though we're not getting the entire arc of the hero's journey.
And that's where, sorry.
No, go ahead.
That's where I would love to take what I know of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey and apply it to Ezra in Rebels, as well as Kanan to a certain extent, because I feel like Dave Filoni, knowing obviously from that he's read The Hero with a Thousand Faces and knows the hero's journey, there's so much more to unpack even in those four seasons with Ezra's journey, with the Bendu and what the Force represents. I think that Dave Filoni really hit some of the key elements of the hero's journey in that entire series.
For sure. And here we are, we're, 21 years after The Phantom Menace, and Filoni just gave an interview last week, maybe the week before, about the importance of the Duel of Fates and Darth Maul versus Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, and how, the Duel of Fates was, it was the galaxy's fate, and it was Anakin's fate right there in that lightsaber battle. And so here, most of Star Wars fandom is 21 years after this came out going, oh, wow, I'd never looked at it like that. And so I think that, yeah, we are rediscovering the nuances within so many of the things that we would even say are familiar to us within the Star Wars galaxy. And I'm right on board with you when it comes to what happened with Filoni and Star Wars Rebels, in particular, Kanan and Ezra. But I'm going to throw another character in there, and that is one that has, I think for a lot of folks, started off probably not loving this character, but have since come to absolutely adore this character, and that is Ahsoka. And when we look at, the psychological challenge of this whole thing, she becomes this really moral compass in a lot of ways when her decision to walk away from the Jedi is really this pinnacle moment in her entire story arc, at least her story arc, what we know of right now. And I think that is one of the things that I appreciate most about that character, because she plays this moral compass pointed due north. I think it also brings into question so many of the preconceptions and misconceptions that myself and others had about the Jedi. Growing up, I thought like the Jedi are good. It's unquestionable. And here Ahsoka comes in to ask either the right or the tough, or perhaps both of those things, questions about, I'm not sure the path that we're headed on is actually the proper, correct path to be on. Let me read a quote from Joseph Campbell. "And so it happens," writes Campbell, "that if anyone in whatever society undertakes for himself or herself the perilous journey by descending, either intentionally or unintentionally, into the crooked lanes of his or her own spiritual labyrinth," I love that phrase, spiritual labyrinth, "he or she chooses to find himself or herself in a landscape of symbolic figures." Then, this part is paraphrased, "these figures," Campbell suggests, "and the hero's subsequent encounters with them are necessary so that the hero or heroine can get rid of his or her old self and become, as Campbell puts it, cleansed and humbled and more concentrated on the transcendental things." There is a lot. There's a lot there. I want to focus a little bit on growing, cleansing, humbling, and coming to this moment of being consecrated, which it typically refers to as a spiritual purification. It could also be a physical purification, and on transcendental things. So things that are of the metaphysical. Gina, when you think of this, right, that we're in pursuit of this thing that is going to really force us to come to terms with our innermost self, the self that we often don't expose to anyone else, not even some of our closest friends or family members know this about us, perhaps. And we are purifying, consecrating ourselves in order to reach this transcendental height of self-awareness. How do you think that that really plays in within Star Wars? And who maybe best embodies that?
So, like it has been said a lot, that it's quite a lot to unpack, especially for someone who is being introduced significantly to the hero's journey through our own series. So woo. One of the examples that Joseph Campbell keeps going back to that I'm appreciative of, because it's very much in line with my own background, is Christianity. Reading through this, one of the things that I thought about was this idea of communion. Before we take communion, one of the things that we do is reflect on ourselves and our own actions and our own lives before we partake in this holy affair. And so I wanted to apply that kind of thinking, hoping that it was correct, to this idea of Star Wars. And I haven't seen it in a while, but my honest to goodness first thought was Anakin and Ahsoka and Obi-Wan in the Mortis arc of the Clone Wars, and this idea of when they confront the father and the daughter and the son, and this moment when the son allows Anakin to see everything that he's going to become in Darth Vader and all the things that are going to happen. And one of the reasons why the father wants Anakin there is so that he can keep the daughter and the son in balance. And so in that moment, I think Anakin is very much confronted with the things that he's done, say for good, but seemed a little dark sidey, on definitely the things that's going to happen to him and the things he's going to do as Vader. And he's forced to confront this is very much a part of who I am, this is very much a part of my actions, etc. And it's just as prevalent as the quote unquote light side good things. And so that's what I very much think of.
Yeah, so I agree with that. And you bring in like the Mortis arc, and I think that that is something. Look, if you haven't already gone back and watched the Mortis arc, which is in the first original Clone Wars animated series, go back. You can even probably find it on YouTube, just searching for it, Mortis arc, M-O-R-T-I-S arc. And there is so much profound goodness that really unpacks all of the Star Wars galaxy as far as our understanding of, my goodness, force, good, evil, right, wrong, time, so many different things. In fact, you know, Barb, one of the things that I really think of going back to kind of the animated world of Star Wars, and that is this journey that Ezra is on within Star Wars Rebels, and towards the conclusion of the series, we have this super profound world between worlds that again, it's this moment not only of his journey but our journey as fans of Star Wars, that we're really taken on. This it was both a psychological and a physical undertaking for him to go through the obstacles of this this kind of parallel universe that exists out there. And you know, as Campbell continues to write in this particular chapter about initiation, he talks about, and Barb, this is where I'm going with this, because you earlier brought up the dreamer, but the dreamer or the hero heroine is challenged, must struggle, must survive, and then goes on to have these changes coming to this culmination. And you know, Carl and I touched on this a little bit last week, and I want to get your opinion on this. Is where do we find good? We can look at Star Wars, but I'll even throw it out there for real world. But where do we find good when it comes from being challenged, struggling, and ultimately surviving? Where does good come out of that?
Wow, let's unpack that question.
Yeah, right.
That's because that's got a huge answer. I think struggling is hard and life is hard, but without the hard, you don't see the other side of that. You know, I had a friend always growing up that would say, it builds character. It builds character. What you're going through is building character. And I think that's just an easy way of saying that in order to be who you are on the other side of something, in order to accomplish greatness, or not even just greatness, but to tackle what life is going to throw at you, you need to go through these challenges to build up that thick skin, that immunity, the ability to really have the strength to get through things. Because if you never struggle in your life, I mean, what's the point in a way? And, you know, just the most obvious example to me is when you look at nature and you see whether it be a baby chick coming out of an egg. Mm-hmm. And if you help the chick to come out of the egg because they're having trouble breaking it apart, then they're not building up the strength that they need in order to survive later in life and probably will be too weak to get past what they're going to come across. You know, the same with a caterpillar. The caterpillar has to go into its cocoon and really undergo such stress in order to become what its ultimate goal is. There's so many examples in nature, not just in our own lives. And with my own kids, you know, I struggle a lot with this struggle, but my oldest hates it when things are hard. She just shuts down and wants to quit. And time again, I've told her the good things in life are hard. It's so much better on the other side when you work through the hard things in life, because you're going to have more ability to tackle what life's going to throw you. And I mean, I'm not speaking in the words of Joseph Campbell that, you know, I have to read the sentence 10 times to really understand what he's talking about. But it's just, you know, it's life. And to quote Tom Hanks in A League of Their Own, the hard is what makes it great.
I thought you were going to go with "There's no crying in Star Wars." But I think that, and this, Gina, this kind of ties into what that you mentioned, because you brought in like Christianity, and certainly Campbell pulls some of the themes out of that. And there's also this sense of, you know, with even within Christianity, if you look at some of the ancient writings, and in particular, the one that comes to mind is an ancient writing from a guy named Malachi, who talks about how the process of refining precious metal, and forgive me because off the top of my head, I don't remember if he's referring to silver or gold, but this process of superheating the precious metal. And as you do that, the impurities float to the top. You take those out, you allow those precious metals, either gold or silver, to cool and harden again. You superheat it up again, more impurities rise to the top and are taken. And it goes through this process again and again until all of the impurities are extracted out of it, and you have what we would in our modern language refer to as pure gold or pure silver, which I think is so important. We also can take a look at some of the other world religions that certainly when it comes to, you know, one of the underlying themes of this entire chapter and where Campbell really tries to tie things together is that the hero, whether a fictional one or we in our own daily lives, is that the purpose is to cleanse oneself of the old self, the habits, the knowledge, in order to gain this spiritual awakening. And Barb, you used a great example of just where we see that in nature. We see it within the caterpillar becoming the butterfly and so many other areas. And going back to modern day takes on religions, you know, of course we are probably familiar with terms like nirvana and finding your spiritual awakening. And Barb, for you and I that live in this little microcosm of spirituality in Santa Cruz, California, boy, oh boy, this is something that people in our area, while they wouldn't necessarily subscribe to any one particular world faith or world religion or religious beliefs, spirituality and the rebirth of oneself is certainly something that I don't care if you're worshiping Christ or you're worshiping rocks in the forest, that there is something about that people find so alluring and so necessary for them as individuals. Gina, let me come back to you. When we look at this process of, and I'll go back to the example of the precious metal being superheated and cooled with the impurities being taken out each time. Why do you think that particular process is necessary to actually become the hero of the story? Can we have a hero that doesn't go through that process? And what does that look like if so?
I think that if we have a hero that doesn't go through that process, we have a very... I don't think we have a hero. I think we have someone who is can do good things that can help the overall, you know, capital G good. Granted, this isn't founded in any sort of philosophy or anything of Justin Campbell, but when I think about that, I think of things like the anti-hero. You have someone who we traditionally see as someone kind of mischievous and someone kind of sneaky who, if it benefits them, they will help you and they will do the right thing, etc. on their journey. But if it also benefits them and they don't need you, they're not a true hero. And so I think it is very important to go through this process of, you know, being melted down and impurities taken from you, because in that moment it becomes selfless. You're thinking about, once again, that capital G greater good for everyone else, and you're moving this bigger agenda, and it's not just about what you have to do in order to make your life or get to the place that you want to go. Suddenly it's, oh, the galaxy needs this, and you become this selfless idea. One of the things that I did this past week was stream She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, and that makes me think of it. And you have this moment where all these people are asking, you know, Adora, what does she want? What is all these things happening? And granted, that's a valid question. She's allowed to have her own wants, goals, and desires. But at the end of the day, I won't spoil it just in case people are still watching the show. but at the end of the day, she has this responsibility of She-Ra, and she has to do things for the greater good of everyone. And so I think that's where the difference comes in.
Yes, hear. And so here's what I'm thinking about right now. As you were saying that, and just kind of the meandering of our journey tonight together, and Barb, I want to kind of get your perspective on this. But one of the things I think of is, okay, I'm going to start like thinking of names of Star Wars characters and looking at, did they go through this process or not? Because I think that there's some folks within the Star Wars galaxy that we would maybe label a hero, and maybe we're just using an improper definition for that person. But I think that there's some folks within the galaxy that have done good, Gina, as you mentioned, but maybe not have gone through this process. And so, Barb, from your perspective, let me throw a couple of names your way. And the first one that comes to mind is Han Solo, because when we last saw Han Solo in 1983, he was still this very cynical, albeit dependable guy. And yet one of the things that brought so many Star Wars fans to tears is that stupid Force Awakens trailer on a Monday night football game where he says, "It's real, all of it." And then all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, Han Solo believes in this all of a sudden, and this is wonderful. And maybe I was the only one brought to tears by that. But anyway, but do you think that he underwent some of these trials that we're talking about in chapter two here, albeit much later in life? What do you think took Han Solo from cynic, been to all ends of the galaxy, and I've never seen anything as one all-powerful force, to it's real, all of it?
It's interesting because Han Solo is most definitely a hero to so many people, including myself. But when you start to look at it from the perspective of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, you're like, well, wait a second. Yeah. What were his trials? What made us love him? And I think sometimes it's that he doesn't always fit the mold that makes him so appealing. He does the things that a rebel would do. You know, backing away from the rebellion. He has this price on his head that is following him around the galaxy. But then he does go through trials for that. You know, after falling for the princess and admitting, well, he doesn't actually admit to his love, but you know that he loves her. but he in a sense goes through his own belly of the whale and his own trials by being frozen in carbonite, And surviving that, as much as he's quote unquote asleep through that, it's still a trial. And there's many trials that he goes along throughout the trilogy that bring him to the point that we love, not only at the end of Return of the Jedi, but that we see at the beginning of The Force Awakens. And then we were also brought the child or young Solo in the Solo movie and seeing what he grew up in and the trials that he had to go through in order to survive. And so I think the Solo movie sheds light on more trials that made him kind of the rough and rugged, ruthless person that you see at the beginning of A New Hope. Yeah. But they were still trials nonetheless that gave him the character that he had to survive.
I like that. When we're looking at some of these ingredients that Campbell throws out for us here as part of this initiation and the road of trials, and he mentioned things like challenged, struggle, must survive. Barb, do you think that, well, I don't even want to make it a leading question. Let me ask you this. Which character do you think underwent the most physical and or psychological trial within Star Wars, at least cinema-wise?
Cinema-wise. Okay, so sticking to the movies, I would have to say it's both Anakin and Luke.
Interesting. So sell me on that idea, because I'm not sure that I agree.
Well, you're talking about the cinematic effects of it, and in the original trilogy, we see Luke go through everything. Devastation and loss at the beginning of A New Hope.
Okay.
Trials and struggling with his own self, what he believes, what he's being told to believe in Empire Strikes Back, and the fight between what he knows to be true and what is true.
Okay.
And so he's not only having the physical effects of the struggles and trials and tribulations, but also the psychological effects that he's going through. And then finally in Return of the Jedi, we see him coming out of that, but still facing tremendous trials, almost being brought to death at the hand of the Emperor, showing that physical, just everything being taken out of him and still not giving into what he, you know, he's come full circle at that point to knowing what he believes and not giving it up, even for his father, for his sister. He's just, he's a Jedi Knight and he won't waver. So I think cinematically, Luke for sure. And if you want me to continue, I can talk about Anakin as well.
Well, let me ask this. And okay, so let's pull and get a little bit wider of a shot then. I think you did a great job saying, okay, cinema wise, this is what I go with. And you backed it up wonderfully. But if we take a little bit of a wider angle, is there another character that comes to mind? So that could include really anything from books, comics, animation, whatever.
Okay. So we're going to take everything. I mean, yes, there's a lot of characters that we can pull. Rey obviously is going to fit this, but I keep shying away from talking about Rey because I haven't delved into it as much as I have with the other characters. She's still new to me. As much as we've been watching her since 2015, there's still, I still need to watch the movies a couple more hundred times in order to really, to really apply it. But with that said, I mean, I feel like Rebels really almost hands it to you in some amazing ways of seeing Ezra and Kanan go through those journeys on their own. And with Ezra, with Kanan, when you see him after he loses his sight before the Bendu, I feel like this is a huge turning point in terms of the psychological and the mythological aspects of what a Jedi Knight is, what the Force really is. The Force is not actually defined as good or evil. It's what you do with it and how you define what you do that makes it quote unquote good or evil. And I think Kanan really showed that in his journey. And as much as we see at the very beginning of Rebels that he is already a Jedi Knight, he still has his own journey that he goes through in that, with ending with sacrifice for Ezra and the Ghost Crew. And then I could continue on with Ezra and all of his trials and challenges and things that we see in Rebels.
I like that. Those are good Regina, come back into the conversation. From your perspective, taking, you know, anything that has the label of Star Wars, and I'll go a step further, Star Wars canon. When it comes to the characters, who, or I guess it could be multiple, who do you think best emulates, embodies this theory of going through the long suffering, the struggle, must survive, being challenged constantly in order to overcome?
So here's where I hop on the Barb fan train, which I've been a conductor on. But honestly, and I'm not quite sure if it's just because we've had Luke around longer, because I've known Luke for basically as long as I've known Rey. And really, when I read these types of things, the character that I come to first is Luke. So much so to the point that when I was first introduced to the hero's journey, before one of my professors even gave us examples, she just went through all the points and the stops. And my first thought was, oh, that's Luke in Star Wars. Mm. That was my very first thought. And so I can very much see him being a classic and clear example. But then also Rey, I think, especially when we get, and I think that's one of the fantasticness of, granted, their journey is shown throughout all of the films that they're in, but I think that's where especially we get the fantasticness of Empire Strikes Back and The Last Jedi. The fact that those movies are so introspective into who they are and what the Force means, I think it's very much Luke.
It's tough for me to push back on either of those. In fact, I won't. I will submit, and I will say one of the things that Rebels and Clone Wars both brought us was a greater insight into the life of Obi-Wan. And here, you know, we pick up with him in The Phantom Menace, and he's a young kid for all intents and purposes. And we see him lose his master. We see him lose his Padawan. We see this continuing, well, we see him lose his love in Satine in the Clone Wars. And, you know, then we see this tragic figure in so many ways, Darth Maul, and this showdown that they have. And here's still Obi-Wan, who's, I guess we'll find out more once the Kenobi series comes to Disney Plus. But from what we know right now, we have an idea that here's roughly 17 years he spends alone on this planet, just not even shepherding this boy in the truest sense, but certainly being this distant guardian, a silent guardian. And by the way, if you haven't seen the art piece entitled Silent Guardian, Google that for yourself. Silent Guardian, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And
oh, it's really good.
Oh my gosh.
It's really good.
If I could afford it, I'd buy it and put it over my mantle. and I think that, you know, that's one of the things. I look at Obi-Wan, and listen, I'm on the record for saying that I am an Obi-Wan stan, or I stan Obi-Wan. And I think that I'm still trying to figure out to what extent would I throw the label of hero on him. Now, obviously, like he's commander of some battles within the Clone Wars and certainly is victorious. I'm trying to figure out in Obi-Wan's life how these steps fit together. And I think that he would probably not use the label himself or self-identify as a hero. But I certainly think when it comes to what we're talking about tonight, the initiation and this really very cyclical journey that he was on, where the suffering, the psychological and physical challenges that he had to overcome were much more consistent than some of the other characters that we've come to know and love. So I'd love to know, like, from our listeners, like, what are your thoughts on Obi-Wan when it comes to this hero's journey, and in particular the road of trials that he's on? How does he score, air quotes, how does he score when it comes to the matrix that Joseph Campbell gives us to have a window of insight into what it means to be a hero and to be on this journey? So as we get ready to land the shuttle tonight, are there any other characters or situations that you feel, Regina, really kind of spotlight this physical or psychological part of the initiation, the trial, and as Campbell puts it, the spiritual labyrinth that the hero or heroine goes on?
Yes. And so I'm really happy that you brought up Obi-Wan, because when I was reading through this, there was a particular line that we have gone over that has stuck with me. And then I feel like you talking about Obi-Wan has kind of made it stick even more. So it's the line that's the dreamer's challenged, must struggle, and must survive. And I think a lot of things in Obi-Wan's life can probably be considered a success. But he does have a lot of tragedy in his life. And so one of the things that I really appreciate about the way that this is worded and framed is it doesn't use that word success. It doesn't say, oh, they have to go through these trials and everything has to end up tip top. Everything. Okay, great. You succeeded through all, you know, standards. You came in air quotes first place. It just says that you must be challenged. You must be struggle. You must struggle and you have to survive. The surviving is the success. And I think that out of all those things, you can say no matter what happened, Obi-Wan, he survived in some kind of way because, you know, A New Hope. But still, he survives.
Right.
And so I really appreciate that line, and especially in connection to Obi-Wan.
I like that. That's a good connection. Barb, how about you? As we get ready to kind of wrap stuff up for this episode, are there any other glaring examples that you want to bring up tonight as far as this initiation phase, the going through the trials, the suffering, the purification and rebirth?
I mean, I think we've touched on most of the main ones, the obvious ones. I think if we looked at some of the other characters, especially in the sequel trilogy, with what Finn goes through and how he, like, he's on his own hero's journey, and his is very unique from the others in that it doesn't start off in a way that you would define him as a hero. And he goes through his own trials with being a stormtrooper and realizing that this is not where he fits, that it's not right for him. What he's doing is wrong. And the trials that he then undergoes in first escaping and then realizing what it is, like realizing his own potential in a sense, because we start off with him just running away and he just wants to keep running away and then becoming aware of something greater than himself and just running away. There's so much there. And that's the thing about the hero's journey is, you know, Luke fits it so well and in such an obvious way, but that doesn't mean that other characters don't fit this pattern that Joseph Campbell has put out in other ways. And I think if you looked at each individual character, you could definitely apply so many of the steps to them in cyclical fashions where they go through it multiple times or in their long journey.
Well said. And so as we begin to wrap tonight, let me go ahead and just read from a transcript. This is a conversation, an interview that Joseph Campbell did with Bill Moyers in the, I believe it was earlier mid-1990s. And you can find this on YouTube if you actually want to watch the interview. They're in the middle of the conversation, but in regards to this part right here, Bill Moyers, the interviewer, asks this question. Well, how is the consciousness transformed, consciousness of the hero transformed? Campbell replies, by the trials. Bill Moyers says, the tests that the hero undergoes. Campbell responds, the tests or certain illuminating revelations, trials and revelations are what it's all about. Bill Moyers responds, well, who in society today is making any heroic myth at us? Do movies do this? Do movies create the myth? Campbell starts to answer with saying, I don't know. That's not really my experience with some of the movies. And then Bill Moyers comes back. Does a movie like Star Wars fill some of that need for the spiritual adventure for the hero? And this is where Campbell is so in line with, I don't want to say he's in line with Lucas, but certainly he's in line with a Lucas viewed of Campbell. It's almost the self-reflection thing. Oh, perfect. He says it does the cycle perfectly. Star Wars is not a simple morality play. It has to do with the powers of life and their inflection throughout the action of the person. And I think that's a great place for us to stop, but that's also, I think, vindication for a lot of the things that we often have as our understanding of Star Wars, or even maybe as far as some of the headcanon we have. But when we see these characters, whether it's on screen or in a book, in a comic, in a video game for that matter, we have this opportunity to see them really make this transformation, to come through this to the other side and have this transformation. I'll go back to Barb, how you described what the caterpillar goes through to become this butterfly. And I think that is probably one of the most alluring things for me personally, is to see, and it just isn't limited to Star Wars, but to see this transpire. I think that gives one of the key themes of all of Star Wars is hope. And so I love when we get an opportunity to see this really unfold. And in particular, when we get to see from start to finish with some of the characters that we know within the Star Wars galaxy. Mm-hmm. Listen, we're going to go ahead and land the plane on this episode, but we're not quite done with you. So stick around, Tauntauns. We'll be back right after this brief break.
We're not done yet.
What did you say?
As long as everybody behaves, this will be quick and painless.
I want more.
All right, my little Tauntauns, we are going to wrap stuff up for you. We appreciate you hanging out with us as we meander through the study of Joseph Campbell and his work, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. We wanted to go ahead and give you a little bit of a preview. We'll be jumping into the second part of Chapter 2 next week. And I really want to encourage you, for those that haven't gone the extra step, to either maybe get this on Audible or grab it on Amazon, and just go grab me a copy of it, because I guarantee that the more that you understand this, it's going to build your love for Star Wars even more. If that was possible, I know that sounds like an incredible task to accomplish, but I promise you that one of the things that will happen is you will start to see some of the beautiful little nuances that maybe you weren't seeing before. With that, I also want to thank each and every one of our patrons for their financial support. We appreciate the sacrifices that you make, and especially in this time when the unknown seems like it's ever present with the economy and jobs and everything else. So for those of you that continue to sacrifice to keep this podcast running, we are so, so appreciative for that. I want to thank personally David Anderson, Brandon Boylan, Jim Capron, Derek DuVernay, Dave Hackerson, Michelle Grandine, Chris Letty, Steve Long, Neil Lowry, Kyle Russell, Regina Sanders, I know her, Connie Shee, Aaron Sinner, Skip Skipton, Krista Smolinski, Franklin Taylor, Rick Villanueva, Michael Ward, and the always fabulous Amy Wishman. Thank you, patrons, for all that you do to support this podcast. That's going to do it for us this time, little Tauntauns. The circle is now complete. We will see you next time in the digital docking bay. And until then, may the Force be with you.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at weareescapepods.com and on Twitter at @WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.
This podcast is a production of Be Heard Studios. To learn more about Be Heard Studios and its shows, as well as opportunities for those looking to begin a podcast, visit us online at BeHeardStudios.com. Be Heard Studios, creators of diverse listening experiences.